I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. Students at Georgia Tech are on a mission to save the honeybee population. The black and yellow insects have been dying off in staggering numbers. We'll talk with the director of the project and the threat that faces bees. Have you ever tried to save something from disappearing, whether it was your favorite Starbucks drink or maybe a television series? Whatever the cause, we want to know what you tried to protest the end of. Call us at 404-500-9457 to be part of the discussion, and then be sure to join us tomorrow at 9 a.m. for more. 2 years ago, Georgia Tech became the first university in the country to accept Bitcoin. But they stopped earlier this year because not enough people were using it. And if you're one of the people wondering, what the heck is Bitcoin? We're here for you. A lot of people are talking about Bitcoin. Very few people really understand it. And that means it's time to break it down. Break it down, baby, because I won't y'all all know. Let me break it down for you again. Break it down now. Bitcoin is a virtual currency. That means there is no tangible evidence of this money. There's no check, no cash card. It's just a number in an online account. Bitcoin is one example of something called cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is not controlled by any nations, like the U.S. dollar is or the euro. And that means it's not manipulated in the way that the Chinese yen is, nor does it rely on the fortunes of banks that are either too big to fail or too small to survive.
A digital currency in which transactions can be performed without the need for a central bank. Woody,
what is a Bitcoin?
Yes.
Who invented this currency? Well, that is the 64,000 Bitcoin question. Back in 2008, a paper was published on the cryptography mailing list. It described a new digital currency, and the author was listed as Satoshi Nakamoto. Satoshi Nakamoto is not the name of a real person. And so far, the world has been unable to figure out who the author really is. If you go to Google Images and search for Satoshi Nakamoto, the picture that you see of a 64-year-old Japanese-American is not Satoshi Nakamoto. There have been any number of theories about Nakamoto's identity, and in 2015, an Australian claimed he was the inventor of Bitcoin. His claim was debunked.
I don't know how to tell you this, so I'm just going to say it. I'm the one who pretended to be him.
You wouldn't do that.
I did. I really wish I hadn't, but I did.
If you have an extra hour or two, you can entertain yourself by reading about the search for the real inventor of Bitcoin. Whoever he or she is, they're probably rich. Expert analysis shows Nakamoto probably has about $1 billion worth of Bitcoin piled up by this point. But we will leave the detective work to others and continue with our explanation of what Bitcoin is. So, just a few months after that initial paper was published, the so-called Satoshi Nakamoto released software. It was used to create a network, and the first bitcoins were issued. That software was open source. That means anyone can look through it, and there are no secrets in the code. Bitcoin is transferred digitally. It's transferred instantly. And the transfer usually costs nothing or next to nothing. It's also kind of anonymous. That's why governments are wary of Bitcoin. Lawmakers worry terrorists can use the Bitcoin network to send untraceable amounts of money.
There's these sites where you can sell everything from fake credit cards to illegal guns and drugs, and they use Bitcoin so they can't be traced.
But Bitcoin is not really anonymous. Law enforcement can generally follow the trail of transactions back to a real person because all Bitcoin transfers are public, completely public. Any person with a computer can look at any Bitcoin transaction ever transacted. It's all recorded in a huge digital ledger called the blockchain. Now, blockchain is another term you may not recognize. The blockchain is the data structure that underlies Bitcoin, and it makes Bitcoin possible. But blockchain can be used for so much more than currency. Blockchain is an incredibly powerful technology that could radically change the way we all do business. It could change the way artists and musicians are paid. It could revolutionize the buying of homes and the execution of contracts.
Yeah, I could do that. It should take about 2 minutes. Just PayPal me some Bitcoins when you get a chance.
What?
The possibilities of blockchain are mind-boggling, but maybe we should leave that for another time. For now, let's get back to the cryptocurrency that uses blockchain, called Bitcoin. Bitcoin is non-refundable. In other words, once it's been transferred, there is no way to get it back. Not if the bike you ordered never arrives, not if somebody stole your identity and took your Bitcoin. The only way to get it back is if the person who received it chooses to return it.
Yeah, I need to return this book.
I'm sorry, we can't take this book back.
Well, you just lost a lot of business.
And that brings us to the most complicated part of Bitcoin, how you get it. There are three ways to acquire Bitcoin. You can buy it. The current value of one Bitcoin is about $680. You can also take Bitcoin as payment for a service or for something that you've sold. The last way is called mining. And I don't mean going into a cave and using a pickaxe like the dwarves in Snow White. In this case, you use a computer to mine for Bitcoin on the internet. But what you're really doing is verifying transactions. Now, let me explain. Let's say I sold you my old iPhone 6 for $50 and you pay in Bitcoin. That transaction is not verified. We don't know that you have actual Bitcoin to use for payment. So the transaction is locked away inside the blockchain. Meanwhile, other people start trying to verify that transaction. That requires special software, a great connection, and patience. According to blockchain.info, it takes more than 200 billion attempts before a miner finds the correct key for verification. And as time goes on, it gets harder and harder to find them. That's because only 21 million bitcoins will ever exist. Remember our elusive friend Satoshi Nakamoto? He or she set a limit on the number of bitcoins that can be circulated. There are currently nearly 16 million out there, so there are only 5 million left to find. And a new one is found about every 9.5 minutes. So if you want to get into the Bitcoin mining game, you're a little late. But you're not too late to use Bitcoin by buying some the traditional way, and then using it to pay for tuition, say, or whatever else your Bitcoin will buy. That's the basics of Bitcoin, but we do have an expert here to explain further. Nathaniel Popper is a Wall Street reporter for the New York Times and author of Digital Gold, Bitcoin, and the Inside Story of the Misfits and Millionaires Trying to Reinvent Money. Good morning, Nathaniel.
Good morning.
Can we talk first about the future of Bitcoin? Georgia Tech stopped accepting it just because nobody wanted to use it. Does Bitcoin have a future?
Does Bitcoin have a future? That's a great question. And by the way, that was quite an explanation. One of the best I've heard in 2 or 3 minutes. I think the way that a lot of people imagined Bitcoin taking off was that people would sort of use it in the ordinary economy to pay for things online, maybe pay for tuition. The reality is that was never the best sort of use case for it. In the United States, we actually have a pretty well-functioning financial system. You know, our credit cards work pretty well. It's not hard to write a check for tuition. These things work pretty smoothly. Bitcoin, you know, if it's going to take off, it's going to have to be significantly better than the existing system. And it is significantly better than the existing system in a lot of the rest of the world. So you see people using it more for ordinary things in places like Argentina or Venezuela or even China, where perhaps the financial system isn't as well developed. Where you see it here in the United States, and this is something that a lot of Bitcoin folks don't like to talk about, is for black market purchases, and specifically for online black market purchases. You know, the first really famous use case of Bitcoin was on the Silk Road, which is this online site where you can buy heroin from somebody in Amsterdam and they'll send it to you. And, you know, you can't do that with a credit card. You can't do that with PayPal, because as soon as PayPal or the credit card finds out, they will tell the police. With Bitcoin, you can send that money, and most of the time, nobody can track you down. As you rightly mentioned, it's not totally anonymous, but it's actually pretty anonymous, and it's worked pretty well for these online drug sites. And so that kind of use of Bitcoin has continued and, if anything, increased, as has the use in sort of less developed countries.
Is that because most law enforcement agencies don't really know how to follow the trail of Bitcoin?
That's a piece of it, but the reality is, if you are careful about it, it is quite possible to To send Bitcoin anonymously or to send Bitcoin without it being easily traceable. Essentially, you know, the most basic element in Bitcoin is that you have a Bitcoin address that is 34 letters and numbers, and then you have a sort of password associated with that. And you are the only person, when you create a Bitcoin address, you're the only person who knows you created that. So as long as nobody else learns that that address is your address, nobody will be able to trace the transaction to you. And so there are a lot of arrests in these online dark markets. I wouldn't suggest that people do that. It is quite vulnerable, but the amazing thing is the degree to which it has worked and to which a kind of new drug market has popped up online, in large part thanks to Bitcoin.
My guest is Nathaniel Popper. He's a Wall Street reporter for the New York Times, author of Digital Gold. So, Nathaniel, one of the things I think that concerns a lot of people is that Bitcoin, because it's not tangible, that it can disappear, that, you know, you can have a glitch in the computer system or a glitch in the matrix and suddenly mm-hmm. all your whole investment goes away. What is the chances of you losing Bitcoin accidentally or through some mistake?
Well, there are two layers to this. The most obvious layer, and I think the thing people hear most about, is that essentially somebody can get the password to your address and they can spend your Bitcoins or they can move their Bitcoins to their account. Actually, very recently, we had a situation like this. One of the biggest Bitcoin exchanges in the world out of Hong Kong got hacked and people's passwords were compromised and their Bitcoins were transferred. And something like $60 to $70 million worth of Bitcoin were transferred out. And
you can't get it back.
And right, as you noted, Bitcoin transactions are irreversible. So you can't, there's no central authority to say, oh, that person shouldn't have those, let's give them back to you. That doesn't exist in Bitcoin. Once they are moved to that address, that person has control of them. And there's nothing anybody else can really do about it unless you track that person down. But there's another layer to it. So that is actually sort of like if somebody got the password to your bank account, they could move the funds out. As you know, if it was a bank, the bank could transfer the money back to you if it was stolen. But you know, that is in some ways. With Bitcoin, people actually like that quality, like the fact that once you transfer it, it's done. You can't take it back. But there's just in terms of sort of the Bitcoins disappearing, Bitcoins never really disappear. They are in the system. And as long as you have your password and it isn't compromised, there hasn't really been a case of Bitcoins disappearing from your account, without somebody else getting access to it. And that is because of all this complicated cryptography that underlies Bitcoin, and because this network is this, you know, global thing that's backed by thousands of computers around the world. It in some ways, it has more security than the existing financial system. In some ways, as we've talked about, it has much less security than the existing financial system. And so what people are obviously trying to do now is figure out the ways to take advantage of the ways in which it has more security and try to do away with the areas where it has less security. And it's a real balancing act. And in the meantime, people have lost a lot of money.
What are the ways in which it's more secure? This network that you talked about, from what I understand, a Bitcoin transaction, the reason you can't ever get rid of it is because it's replicated. The Bitcoin in that blockchain is replicated in every computer that's connected to it all over the world. It would be almost impossible to disappear it.
Right. I mean, you know, I guess one useful way to think about it is, you know, the security of a file that is on your computer, on your desktop, versus one that's in the cloud. You know, if you save it on Dropbox or Google Docs, if somebody that file that's just on your desktop, on your computer, if your computer gets corrupted, if you accidentally delete the file, if you drop it in the toilet, that file is gone. If it's in the cloud, it's replicated, and you're going to have access to it even if your computer goes down. That's a little bit like Bitcoin. It's like a financial system in which the record is kept on the cloud by lots of people around the world. And so even if one person on that network goes down, everybody else still has the records. And you know, that gets to this idea of the blockchain, which you hinted at. But, you know, really, at the end of the day, what Bitcoin is, it's a new way to store and move data, digital data. And it can sound a little wonky and boring, but it turns out that storing and moving data around is sort of at the core of the digital economy. You know, it's at the core of everything we, all of the sort of financial systems and information systems in the world. And that's why people are so excited about this technology, because it seems to represent a new, more secure way to store and move technology. But there are a lot of problems to overcome in the meantime.
So we have about 30 seconds left here, Nathaniel. What are the chances that in a couple years I'll be paying for my Amazon.com purchase with Bitcoin?
Well, I think probably you won't be paying online bills in Bitcoin. What's interesting is that central banks are playing with this technology to move their currencies onto something like the Bitcoin blockchain. So the pound sterling, they're playing with this at the Bank of England. The Fed is having conferences where they're talking about this. So you may pay for your bills on Amazon with a dollar that is on a blockchain, much less likely that you'll pay with Bitcoin itself, I think.
That's Nathaniel Popper, Wall Street reporter for The New York Times, author of Digital Gold, Bitcoin, and the Inside Story of the Misfits and Millionaires Trying to Reinvent Money. Nathaniel, thank you so much. Very enlightening.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show for today, but give me your thoughts. Would you invest in Bitcoin? Would you let someone pay you in Bitcoin? Do you trust a digital currency? Call us at 404-500-9457. We're also on the Twitter. It's at OST Talk. Or you can post to Facebook. For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great day.